Hey friends, your pal Mike Shea from Sly Flourish here with another episode of Sly Flourish's Lazy GM Prep. In this weekly show, I go through steps from Return of the Lazy Dungeon Master while preparing for my Sunday role-playing game. In this case, I am running a Numenera campaign called The Rise of the Fourth Emperor. The name keeps changing. This show, like all of the work of Sly Flourish, is brought to you by the patrons of Sly Flourish. If you want access to an exclusive Discord channel, access to all kinds of tips and tricks for making your game better, access to things like the City of Arches sourcebook and other material to help you run awesome D&D games, you can join the Sly Flourish Patreon. Patrons of Sly Flourish also have the... What am I going to say about that? To all the patrons of Sly Flourish, thank you so much for your support. We are at the final session of my Numenera campaign. I think it's close to 30 sessions that I've been running Numenera, and it has been a great time. Looking back, just taking 10 seconds to think about it, being able to run 30 sessions of Numenera with my group has been an absolute pleasure, an absolute joy. And I know it's something that people don't often get the ability to do. We buy a lot of RPGs, we read a lot of books, and we're like, man, it'd be great to run that campaign. And for years, 5 years, 6 years, I've been thinking about running a Numenera campaign, and now I finally got to do it. And I'm in the last session, and that's just great. Having a group that was interested in doing it, that stayed interested in doing it, has been really, really cool. So I really want to make sure that this final session of this campaign is going to be a really good one, a really memorable one. And we're going to talk about how to do that, because I'm nervous. I'm really nervous about running a final session. I don't know what I'm going to do, and I'm scared. So we are going to work together. It is great to have the support of my friends here on Twitch to help me get through this prep so that I can make sure that I am running a session that's actually going to be fun. I need a fair bit of time for this, so I'm going to only do a very brief summary of where things are for this final sessions. The characters have basically been in a global war against an entity known as the Fourth Emperor, an entity that exists in the outside and also exists in cyberspace and also exists in this world. It exists across three worlds. That's been kind of a big thing, but I don't know if that's going to come into play. They have managed to... The Fourth Emperor is arriving in a temple that is underwater, a huge underwater ziggurat in a city known is the drowned city of clay. And they are, the characters have managed to bring an army with them known as the Glistening Army. One of the characters is a member of this army, and all of their brothers and sisters have come to join them in this battle, in this final battle. And the nice thing about the Glistening Army is they can shift in and out of the data sphere. So they can basically teleport to any place on the planet. And so they are all coming and they are engaged in this last final conflict against the remaining forces of the Fourth Emperor, and then face the Fourth Emperor themselves. Beyond that, I really have no idea what we're going to do. But I have some general thoughts, some general philosophies that we are going to follow while we're preparing for this last session. So I'm going to start by generating a session planning. And today is the 25th. As always, I'm using Notion to do my campaign planning. Not as always, but as I have for the past few years, I've been using Notion for my campaign planning. If you are interested in knowing how I do it and using Notion, you can find a link into the show notes below for using Notion for campaign planning, including getting access to templates that let you build campaigns like this. So, 25 September, Sunday, Numenera. So we'll take a quick look at the characters. As far as I know, I know five of the six people have confirmed. The six has been kind of hard to bring in, so I'm not sure if Joe, Jad the Shade, will be able to join us. I'm hoping so, but he's been very busy. He's been working on weekends, and he has had a hard time joining it. But I think everyone else is planning to be there. We have Baiko, the intuitive Jack, who rides the lightning, played by Pat. We have Cecilia, the hideous Jack, who wields power with precision, played by Sharon. Jad the Shade, the meddlesome Jack, who exists partially out of phase, plays by Joe. Juniper, the cheerful Nano who possesses a shard of the sun, played by Juliet. Nakia, a beneficent Jack who acts without consequences, played by Jerry. And Samji1138L, a protective glaive who fuses flesh and steel. All of these characters, I don't have to worry too much about like drawing the characters into this session and making sure that they have like their final hook. And the trick is I let them build those final hooks through something I'm certainly going to be doing, which is 1 year later. After they deal with the situation here, I'm going to leave a good piece of it, probably at least a half hour of the game, for the players to describe where their characters go after the end of this session. And with this group in particular, those have always been excellent stories, which means as long, and I have been asking, is there anything that they really want or need to do before the end of this session? And I got some interesting questions. We had like these campfire tales and Baiko's thoughts. How much further do we go to the end of the road? what's, you know, the shortness of life, you know, that they each have kind of given me things like this. But in this particular, I have like a final episode. Cecilia's final wish has done what she wishes to do. Punch the fourth emperor in the face. That's what she wants to do. And I think Jed was her. Juniper, I said, like, what are the final things? And she said that she, you know, she trusts in her friend. The one thing that she mentioned, I have it in here somewhere? I knew I recorded it because she mentioned it. I didn't put it in here. That's terrible. She said that she really didn't want to have situations of great moral ambiguity. Sometimes it's just nice in order to know that you're making the right choice. So that's something I want to kind of hang on to. Nakia said, everything we have done has brought us together. You know, we're not in Badrav anymore. When this is over, what happens to us as a group? Is saving the world the glue that is holding us together, and what happens when it's over? Very interesting things. And Samji, you know, very wants to reunite with the Glistening Army, hoping to kind of, you know, reconnect with the people that he's followed, or his family is 6,000 brothers and sisters. And is considering offloading his consciousness and getting rid of his physical bodies. And they did take special note that Cecilia has the kill switch. Cecilia can speak a single word that can stop Samji. So that can be very interesting. So I don't really know where things are going to go, but the characters are, you know, and the players are very eager for this. So the strong start is going to be planning and prepping the final battle. I think it's going to be the fourth emperor is here. That, you know, this, they've seen this like great big power flux occurring at the ziggurat, and the power flux is going to lower, and they can feel it, and all of them can feel it deep down in their bones, all the entities that they're dealing with. The fourth emperor is here. We need to stop him right now because the fourth emperor has arrived. I think that is, you know, the cool bit of what's going to happen. And then they have to think about what the circumstances are. And how they are going to approach this thing. So then we want to think about, like, what's the situation? So we're going to have a different section to our notes today that talks about the current situation that's going on. In the drowned city of Clay, the fourth emperor has arrived. The ziggurat, where the fourth emperor arrives, is surrounded by thousands of Clayites who swarm over it and protect it. There's no back entrance, no sneaky way in. Inside the temple, so if we think about it, there's a giant inverted spherical portal through which the fourth emperor comes. There's an umbilical, the fourth emperor, who we saw a picture of. Let me pop open a picture of him, because I put there, is known as a Eldmore, and it has like an umbilical, right? It's got this weird alien skull with these weird cybernetic appendage parts, and then it's got an umbilical that goes all the way back into its world. It's still connected to its world for now. A great umbilical connects the fourth emperor to its world. I can't spell umbilical. There we go. Who is the handmaidens? Like, what's the, I mean, that's kind of, I guess that's works, right? There are these powerful, huge, powerful otherworldly constructs known as the handmaidens. Draw the FE into the world. So what would be, let's take a quick look through, I have a bestiary that I did of like what the bestiary of the drowned city of Clay. And we can think like which one of these creatures, that's pretty grand, that's pretty nasty looking. I kind of like that. These guys are pretty cool. I like them. Radamanths. Dealt with those. That thing's kind of cool. That's very otherworldly. I think we might go with that. Yeah. So we're going to go with this thing, which is, did I put the name at the top or the bottom? I put the name at the top. So there's called Vorjas from the Bestiary 3. Let's pop open the Bestiary 3. Numenera folder. Bestiary 3. And that was page 174. The Vorja. The Myriad and the Swarm. So I am not going to hang on to their lore. I'm just going to grab the art, because I think the art is fine. They are probably level 6, the Handmaidens. Level 6 creatures. Draw the fourth emperor into the world. I think probably they also have, I used them before when I'm thinking about like other sort of monsters that would be here. There's another, let's see, I have the fourth emperor bestiary. Yeah, bestiary 1 has the Rorithic, which I always loved. They were the assassins. I want to bring them back again. So let's bring open the bestiary 1. Look at them, they're right on the cover. And those guys, I lost my notes. The Rorithics, page 109. Oh no, I froze my browser. There we go. We'll grab a screenshot of that guy. They're level 6 too. And I think that the Rorithics, like the Glisten, they are probably the equivalent of the members of the Glistening Army. They too can shift in and out of the Datasphere or even in and out of the outside. And they're underwater, but they probably work underwater too. So Rorithics, B1, page 109, I think. I was pretty close to that. What page number was that? Yeah, look at that, 109, I remembered. How many of them? 6 of them? 6 Rorithics swarm to protect and defend the temple of the fourth emperor. So I think that's kind of a big piece. So that's the situation, right? That's kind of what's going on inside the place. The situation, as far as the characters know, is that the fourth emperor has arrived. He is inside the center of the temple of in the city of Clay, and that all of the Clayites have swarmed to the temple and are kind of, you know, prostrating themselves in front of the temple for the coming of the fourth emperor, to kind of give their energy to the fourth emperor. And they need to break in, but there's not going to be an easy way in, which means that the Glistening Army is just going to have to cut them a hole and cut them a way in. And the swarm will be around them. So preparing the final attack, attacking the outside of the temple, breaking into the temple, the portal chamber. And then in the portal chamber, there's kind of phases. And I think the first phase will be the Handmaidens and the Rorithics, and then the fourth emperor. And we'll do like waves, and then it will be over. And then 1 year later, I got to make sure my browser window is sized that you guys can see what I'm typing. There we go. So I think that is there anything else that I really need to have? Simple is good, right? Especially for the conclusion of a campaign. Keeping things pretty simple and straightforward. This is my big thing. I think we have a drive to really change up a campaign at the end. And I would resist that drive. I think that players, you know, this is the time to reward what the players know and what they want. And we should give them what they want. And changing things around a lot, I don't think, like coming up with great big surprises, I don't like it. And this is where I get into like my big argument about the difference between the ending of Breaking Bad and the ending of Game of Thrones, where like, give them what they want and don't shake all of their preconceptions. Be like, let's give them an ending that's totally different than what everybody wanted. And we're all surprised. Yeah, we're all surprised at how terrible your ending was. Breaking Bad, they gave you what you wanted. They tied up the loose ends. They're like, it wasn't realistic at all. The ending of Breaking Bad didn't follow a lot of the arcs that the rest of the show made, because most of the time Walt's things don't tend to work. And in that case, everything worked out perfectly. But whatever, that's what we wanted. So it's okay to kind of go against, you know, A, go against your drive to kind of make everything different and weird and new. And go against your, you know, instead, right? Some Sunjammer here says, Brandon Sanderson says, it's all about promises and payoffs, right? Fulfill your promises. What did you promise? I promised them a battle against the fourth emperor. One of the players said, I want to punch the fourth emperor in the face. You're going to get to do that. Doesn't mean it's going to be easy. And it doesn't mean crazy stuff won't happen during the game. But I'm not planning on, oh, it turns out the fourth emperor are the friends you've all made along the way. Oh, it turns out Samji was the fourth emperor the whole time. No, right? Turns out the fourth emperor is actually really a good guy and you're all bad and you've been doing wrong stuff all this time. No, man, nobody wants that. So instead, we want to make it pretty straightforward. And that's what we're going to do. So that's really, even like secrets and clues at this point we don't really have a lot because there's like, it's not a big thing about discovery, right? I mean, there are there final things to pick up? Maybe. And we're going to go through, and I'm actually going to steal a lot of secrets and clues from last week's game because I don't think I ended up using them all. But there's not a lot of secrets that they're going to pick up. So we definitely found out that Selpha, the herald of the first emperor, fully controls the Datus for blocking Numenera, that she's millions of years old. The shield below is the primary vertus between the deep and the surface. They released that. Throne of the fourth emperor protected by thousands of clayites, more than any group, including the Quiet Empire, could take it on at once. Yes, we learned that. Shield below is powered by a massive crystal. The fourth emperor isn't the only one. The fourth emperor is increasingly known as called the Eldmerem. I think that is a secret we definitely want to bring. The world of the fourth emperor is built from the ruins of many thousands of other worlds, other universes. Within it floats the artifacts of these fallen worlds. I think that is an important secret to drop in. The Eldmerem are dimension-traveling destroyers. Yes, we want to bring that up. Some of these secrets I think they'll probably learn right in the beginning of it. The portal bringing in the Fourth Emperor is active, powered by the same otherworldly crystal as the shield below. Portal's an inverted sphere. No matter how you look at it, the inside of the sphere is a hole. The world of Fourth Emperor are ruins of countless worlds. Yeah, we're grabbing both of those, although I kind of already said that. Any other big secrets and clues that we want to reveal here? Final reveals. Again, we're not drawing big surprises. We're not dropping in big surprises. I don't know. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. How have things been on the surface? The surface is largely recovered. Any final secrets? I mean, this is a little bit of a secret. The hex represents pure chaos. The fourth emperor represents the drive towards perfect order. The fourth emperor, above all, wants a world of pure order to offset the chaos it's seen in so many other worlds. I think that works pretty well. Any other secrets? We'll see as we go. So this is one typically in like a D&D game, I'd be thinking a lot about like the encounter and encounter balance and how to work this final battle into something that is like tactically fun. And Numenera, it's a little hard because it's not a combat focused game. Combat doesn't generally drive what happens in Numenera, but there is kind of a big final battle. And I think when we think about that final battle, that the handmaidens, so the handmaidens are like, they're level sixes. There are probably three of them, right? And maybe this is all you really need for, and the Rorithics are, there are six of them. We'll make them level fives. We're going to lower the level. Nobody will know. It's a little too tough. The fourth emperor, however, and this is where things get tricky, is level 10. So what does level 10 mean? And this is something we really need to think about. This is something that I've been pondering and worrying about since I knew that I was going to be doing this. Level 10 means that on a D20 roll, you have to roll a 30 in order to hit it. And I don't know, I'm not an expert in math, but I don't think you can roll a 30 on a D20, which means you have to lower it at least four levels before you even have a chance at hitting it with an 18. In order to hit it, or defend against it, or deal with it on a 50-50 chance, with roughly a 50-50 chance, you have to lower it six to seven levels before you stand a chance to roll a 50-50 shot against it. Six to seven levels. That is a tremendous amount of levels, which means they definitely need assets that can lower it and keep it lowered, keep the fourth emperor lowered so that they even have a chance of hitting it or defending against it. Because it's going to be blasting them for 10 points of damage each. It's probably can hit 3 to 4 to 5 targets. I think it's going to be like disintegrating members of the, it's going to be destroying a lot of the glistening army is going to get hit pretty hard. So what are some of the assets the characters can get? So I think this is an important secret and clue. The characters do not stand a chance of going toe-to-toe with the fourth emperor directly. No creature they know of can do so. I think that's important. In order to defeat the Fourth Emperor, they must pull it down from its godlike position into something reasonably mortal. Right? So that is a, you know, what are they going to do to bring it down? A big one is the hex. The hex can, if they infect the Fourth Emperor with the hex, it automatically lowers the Fourth Emperor from a 10 to an 8. Breaking the umbilical before it's fully gestated could drop it a level. That can take it down to like a 7, which then, you know, those kind of things could reasonably bring it down. Are there other things that they can do? I mean, I'm going to let the players kind of decide what other things they could do. They could try to close the portal, which is probably a level 8 task on its own. And what's the umbilical's level? The umbilical is probably a little weaker, but it's probably like level 8 as well. And that would bring the Emperor down to a level 8. Are there other things that they could do? I mean, there's other things that the characters might decide, but they're going to have to find ways to lower its level. And the ideal that we're aiming for is probably a 6 or 7, that if they can get it down 4 levels, then using their other typical character stuff, they can lower it even further. But they have to lower it up to 4 levels. And so you want to say, like, are there other opportunities? What are the other things that they could reasonably do? Oh, they could use the breakers to crack the datasphere walls of the Fourth Emperor. Doing so could destroy the breakers. I think there are 4 breaker, 5, what do we say? They're quad cores, right? And there were 5 of them. So I think, what would we say? How many of them would perish in this? Would probably be a straight D6, D6 minus 1 for how many are destroyed. If they send like 100 members of the Glistening Army against it and swarming over this thing, that will lower it a level. So how many members of the Glistening Army could reasonably attack at once? You know, probably 20 or 30. 30 members of the Glistening Army could attack the FE directly, either in the datasphere or in the physical world, or both. Doing so lowers the FE's defenses by 1 step, and they lose 1d20 minus what? Or 1d20 plus 10? Members. They're going to lose at least 11, and maybe all of them. So that lets them use 2 of the assets that they've got. Are there any other assets that the characters have access to? They've got the Glistening Army, they've got the quad cores. They could send in other members of their team, and that would include Kukuchiyo. That would include who else? Who's Kukuchiyo's, their mother, Cassandra, Rabbit, Takrin, what other NPCs can be involved in this final battle? I don't think Navro and Burham, they're not much of a fighter. Axis will be there. Kimley, yes. Thank you. Kimley would make sense. Probably the Aeon Priest. Sinnott will be there too. Where is she? Maeve Jacobs. So here's a hard part. How do we determine who survives and who dies? I mean, there's a lot of people being sent into this. And this is sort of that like final battle in your Mass Effect style situation. You know, what are the likelihood? So I think the idea of rolling randomly to determine who dies, and making, of course, the players do it. I'm not rolling to see which characters die. God, I don't want that responsibility. What are there? I would like to roll sort of odds on each one of them. And what are the reasonable odds? You know, how, what can they do to sway the odds? And what, you know, can the players help sway the odds in a certain direction? Are there things that they can do? And then what would the baseline odds be? So we could say like a 50-50 shot, right? You roll any die, and on an even they live, and on an odd they die. But then, you know, you could say kind of like, you know, what do the characters sacrifice? You know, you can do a sacrifice on anybody to try to save them, I think. So evens, they live. Odds, they die. What does a character sacrifice to get a reroll? But you have to live with the reroll. I might ask the players how they feel about that, right? And we can, I almost would rather have the players and the, you know, and I come up with a system that we think is good. Like, I think that this would work. How do they feel about that? We'll do a pause for a minute, because this could be really bad. They could have a series of bad rolls, and all of these NPCs that they love and adore could get wiped out. You know, boy, that's tough. So I think we might, or they could say like, no, I think this is okay. Or they could say like, we're not going to, I cannot live with Kim Lee dying. Let's say it's Kim Lee, or I cannot live with Kikuchiyo dying. So we're going to keep them out of play. Like, they're not going to be, you know, we're going to keep them safe. You know, that might be, you know, that might be an event. I don't want to hurt the game. I don't want to kill the game, because it's like, they lose everybody. Everybody dies. It's not likely. But it could happen. You could have a bunch of bad rolls and a lot of people die. So, you know, that idea of like, they get to do a reroll, but they have to sacrifice something to do the reroll. What do they sacrifice? Like, what? And they can decide, do they take a mortal wound themselves? Is something, some powerful resource that they have destroyed? Do they have to let an evil entity in? You know, how does that work? Right? How does that play? I think that matters. So 1 year later, nope, still dead. Yeah. So I don't know. I think we're going to do something like that and see how it goes. I think that's going to be part of like their, what resources do they have available? They're going to know like Kikuchiyo can lead a member of the Glistening Army inside the Datasphere, because he's done it before. Cassandra can kind of run the quad cores, right? Rosalind is managing comms, but if the Fourth Emperor gets word that it's Rosalind who's managing comms, he might destroy her. Takran the Herald probably has better odds than most. He probably, you know, he's probably more likely to survive. So Axis, the commander of the Glistening Army, could go. You know, Kimley could go. Sanad could go. Maeve Jacobs could go. Any of these people could fall. And I think that's kind of interesting, because we've dealt with these NPCs for a long time. Oh, of course, they're Terrence, right? I think Terrence will probably be there, certainly. So no, not Kimley. Could happen. This is a little different than like building a situation where, you know, you're shaking things up. Like this one, the dice are shaking things up. I'm not making decisions about who lives and who dies. I am trying to say, it's if they bring everybody in against this fight, against this godlike entity to try to beat it, doing so puts those people at risk. And we're going to let the dice determine the risk. And that could change the story a lot. But I think I am going to say like, hey, it's even, you know, everybody's got basically even odds of survival. But if you're willing to sacrifice something, you give a reroll when you roll it. And it has to be a relatively meaningful and permanent sacrifice. It can't be like, oh, use a cipher, unless you come up with something, right? Unless some way that you saved them. And the other angle is I'm going to pause for a minute and talk to the players and make sure they're okay with something like this, or would they rather try to handle it some other way, and what way would they like to handle it? Because this is like a big monumental scene. I do want to ruin it. So in this case, I can actually talk to the audience of my show and say, hey, audience, what would you like to have happen? And then figure that out, because I don't want people to, you know, I don't want to ruin a 30 session campaign because like everyone gets wiped out. So, but it'd be memorable. So I think that's pretty good. I think, do we have enough resources? You know, do we have enough resources to that we feel like we can lower you know, that we feel like we can lower the level of the fourth emperor down a step. And maybe one, so one possibility is, what if like each of these NPCs is a one use asset? They can call upon one of these NPCs to help lower the fourth emperor, either on a defensive side or on an offensive side. And doing so lowers it a step. You could probably only use two at a time, two for any given role. But when you do so, you put them at risk and they have a 50-50 chance of death, unless you're willing to take a permanent effect. And if you take like a permanent loss of some sort, then you can give them a reroll on that check. But that's a way, I think that that's kind of a neat way. Each of these are an asset on the check. So that way, throughout the battle, they can call upon these. They can't call, I suppose they could call on the same one multiple times, not if they die. That could be pretty interesting. I think we'll try that out. I think we'll see how that goes. And then the big one is the 1 year later. I've mentioned 1 year laters before. Essentially, at the end of the campaign, I say 1 year passes after the events. Where do your characters end up? And we go around the table and each player talks about where their character ended up 1 year later. They can kind of riff off one another if they have ideas about how they do that. I think that that can be, you know, that can be, it's a really, really wonderful way to end a campaign. And I've really enjoyed it. So I plan on doing it now. It's funny. I walked into this feeling very nervous about running this campaign, about running this session. But now I feel pretty good about it. I feel like I've got, you know, boy, did I look at that scene list. You don't typically have a scene list like that. Although like all of these, like all the NPCs are all here. I'll just copy them and drop them right into my NPC list. Hey, look, there they all are. Fantastic. Locations are easy. Drowned City, the Drowned City of Clay. Monsters, I have my list. I stuck all my notes up in these other sections. We have the Handmaidens. We have the Rorithix. We have the Bestiary of the Drowned City of Clay, so I can always look monsters up there. The Fourth Emperor, of course. The Rorithix. That all looks pretty solid. Treasure-wise, I don't think we're going to worry too much about treasure. There's almost like an infinite amount of technology that exists here. Are there any... I guess one other thing is like the big final questions. What do they choose to do with the hex? What do they choose to do with Takrin? I guess that's really the big question, is like, what do they fulfill their promise of injecting the hex into the world of the Fourth Emperor? Because that could have universal ramifications. But they made the promise, so we'll see. I think the fact that their world is a dead world of, you know, a dead world of planets. Can they use the hex each turn to get the emperor to kill it? I don't know what that means. No, the hex doesn't count. Like, it's not an NPC like that. Because the hex is a sentient virus. So it will definitely live. But it made a promise that it will leave Earth alone as long as the characters inject the hex into the other world. So we'll see how that goes. So I'm not going to worry about treasure. And I'll write down the one year later notes probably in this session. And I think that that is going to be it. So we are all set. I feel good about this next session. I'm excited to see where it goes. I think I'm going to have to do a show probably off time, a different time, to talk about how this campaign ended and kind of give my final thoughts about running Numenera. I already did a session where I talked about what running Numenera was like, but certainly I think people are going to want to know, how did this campaign go? So we will probably do another show another time where I talk about how this ended up, what worked well, what I liked, and any other observations that I have. Because next Sunday, I think we're going to be talking about our session zero for Scarlet Citadel, the Kobold Press adventure Scarlet Citadel, which I've already started working on my session zero notes and things like that. So we're going to switch back to doing 5th edition D&D. We're going to be using D&D plus a lot of Kobold Press material. So that's going to be what we're doing there. So I want to thank everybody for hanging out with me today. It is always a fantastic pleasure to do this show. Thanks for hanging out for all of these sessions while I've been preparing for my Numenera game. I'll have another video where I talk about how it went. So you can tell me how things have gone, that'd be great. If you enjoyed this show, you can help me out by subscribing to the Sly Flourish newsletter, where you can get a weekly D&D article sent right to your inbox, along with a free adventure generator PDF. You can go to the Sly Flourish bookstore. Link is in the show notes below. Same for the newsletter. And you can go to the Sly Flourish bookstore and pick up physical versions of Return of the Lazy Dungeon Master, The Lazy DM's Companion, and The Lazy DM Workbook, all in beautiful offset printed versions that you can get directly from the Sly Flourish bookstore. You can join the Sly Flourish Patreon for a very low monthly price. You get access to all kinds of exclusive adventures, exclusive campaign source book for the City of Arches, tips and tricks for running your D&D games, video previews, access to a Discord server, all kinds of great stuff. And you can also help me out by subscribing to this video, subscribing to my channel, liking the video, leaving a comment, letting people know that you like this video, sending it to your friends and the like. So thank you all very much. Have a great day and get out there and play a role-playing game.